All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
Welcome. Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. My partner, Dale Throneberry, is in sick call. They're probably going to give him a couple of aspirin, pat him on the back and say, get back and report to duty. But we all know how that goes. So he'll be back certainly next week. And maybe I'll even get him to squeak in a little bit with his bad voice here today. But we're glad to have our friends from the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, Brian Hayes, with us, and retired Brigadier General Carol Ann Fossone, to answer some questions about disability issues and what's going on at the VA. We got something special, hopefully, to talk about there. But before we really get started, we always want to thank our sponsors. We can't do this, and we're entering our 20th year here on Veterans Radio, and we can't do this without sponsors like the National Veterans Business Development Council, who you can find at nvbdc.org. NVBDC is the nation's premier certifier, third-party certifier of veteran-owned businesses, which is important for veteran businesses so that they can get work not only with the government sector, but the large private sectors. Companies also want that certification to know that they're dealing with a truly veteran-owned business. NVBDC has been a longtime sponsor, and we're glad to have them as partners in this program with us here on Veterans Radio. Similarly, Legal Help for Veterans, a veterans disability law firm handling claims nationwide, has been a supporter of Veterans Radio for a long time. And you can find them at legalhelpforveterans.com on the web, or 800-693-4800. So as we get started into this, I think it's one of the things I wanted to point out as we get into this next segment is, over the years, certainly the years that many of us served, the number of women involved in the military continues to grow, grows at a higher rate than the growth of pretty much any other subgroup in the military on the recruiting side. And currently, there are about 17% of the active duty force is women, and roughly 21% of the National Guard and Reserves force is women. And that actually puts the United States in a really good spot as it relates to, if you look at numbers from the NATO countries, the only other NATO country that has a higher percentage of women involved in the military happens to be Hungary, of all places. So it's really, women have always served in the military, and they certainly are serving at a high percentage rate today. And if you read any of the recruiting problems that you see the Army and other services having, they're really focusing on women as a demographic that they need to be recruiting for. So that really begs the question, we're going to have more women veterans, and we have to make sure that we're taking care of them. And that brings us to what the VA is doing in this area. And we're glad to have Brian Hayes on from the Charles S. Kettles VA Center. Brian, tell us a little bit about what the VA is thinking about as it relates to more and more women veterans.
Well, VA, and Cheryl will be able to talk about this in a minute too. VA is really just retooling things and rethinking about how we serve our women veterans for our healthcare system specifically. We're about 10% women veterans that are coming to us, and that's going up by about a percentage a year, or a little slightly less than a percentage a year. So it's increasing pretty quickly. And that means that we have to rethink how we provide healthcare to all of our veterans. There are different ways of doing it depending on your gender, and getting away from that attitude of the last 100 years or so that the VA is a man's hospital, and it's certainly not. It's a healthcare system for everyone. I don't know if you wanted to bring on Cheryl or not, but she could certainly talk about all the intricate details about what we're doing for women veterans.
We'd love to connect Cheryl Allen, who is the Women's Veterans Program Coordinator for the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System. I've show that she's joining, but I don't have her, I don't think. Do I have you there, Cheryl?
I'm on the phone. I can't get into Zoom, but I am here.
Oh, perfect. We're glad to have you and bring some of your expertise to this conversation. As you've heard, we're sort of recognizing that we have a lot more women in the military, active and reserve, and that means we're going to have a lot more women veterans as time goes on. So tell us a little bit about what the VA is doing in that regards from your standpoint as the Women Veterans Program Coordinator.
First of all, I'd like to thank you. It's an honor to be here today speaking with Veterans Radio and also the guest that's on the line with us, Brian Hayes. And also...
Thanks for the promotion, Cheryl.
General Brigadier Fassant. Her and I, we go back a long way, some years and years ago and stuff. So over the years, I'm sure as she comes into the VA and has worked throughout the nation with various organizations in the Office of Women's Health, that we can see the different things that have happened over the years. And just a quick note to say that this year we're celebrating 100 years of the VHA caring for women veterans. So I think that's great, and you'll hear about it more and more. The actual day of celebration will be in September sometime, but we're celebrating it throughout the year, so I know you'll hear more about it as time goes on. So I'd like to point out, too, some of the things that you said. The number of women veterans enrolling in the VA for health care is increasing, and it's also placing new demands on the VHA healthcare system. More women are choosing the VA healthcare system than ever before, when women account for over 30% of the increase in veterans served over the past 5 years. Women veterans are using the VHA service, has tripled since 2001, and has grown to over 6,000 plus women today. So you're right, 17.2% of active duty and 21.1% of the guards and reserves. So we continue to see the demand and the increase for women. So what the Office of Women's Health has done under the leadership of Dr. Patty Hayes is taking these things under consideration, and really she's been talking about these things for years now since she was appointed in this position back in 2007, I do believe, is how do we enhance the quality of care to our women? And one of the things that we looked at was improving services for primary care, gynecology, maternity care coordination, infertility issues, as well as IVF, also funding for what we know as the Women's Health Innovation Staffing Enhancement-wise, as well as training initiatives to train our staff. And then there was also legislation passed, but I can talk about all those things and tap back into them. I don't want to keep rattling on. I want to give you the opportunity to ask any more questions. Also, I just wanted to point out, at the end of fiscal year FY 2020, there were about 833,000 women veterans enrolled, which accounted for 9.5% of veteran enrollees. And by the end of FY 2030, the VA projects over 1,121 women veterans will be enrolled, which would account for 12.6% of the veteran enrollees.
And Cheryl, those are all great indicators that the level of effort that the VA is putting out for women veterans is really increasing. And part of that is just to get the word out, isn't it? That women who may not realize they would otherwise qualify for VA healthcare, they kind of have to hear that, hey, we're available, we're here for you, and we have the kind of services that you need. So is part of what's going on is just also a communication effort?
Yes, that's huge, too. And over the last, I guess, maybe almost 10 years now or so, I think we came up with the National Call Center for Women Veterans. And so that call center is out there, and the National Call Center allows women to, if they're veterans, or even family members as well, that they can actually call the National Call Center for Women Veterans, and they could also go to the women's, www.women, veterans.gov website, and also go there and be connected with the National Call Center information as well. They can do it by text. They can do it by calling. And they can also, I think we also have a Facebook page now for the National Call Center. And like you said, the biggest thing is communication, right? Letting the veterans know that these services are available to them. A lot of times you email through all our veterans, whether male or female, right, that a lot of times they don't think they're a veteran, right? They'll say that, you know, well, I was in the military. You know, now they're out of the military, and they don't see themselves as being veterans. They oftentimes will say, you know, well, a veteran is a person that was in war, and
right.
That's not true either. So, like you said, it's the communication and getting it out there. So we do communicate these efforts, and we have ways for them to get a hold of us. And once, if they call the National Call Center, we are tasked as Women Veteran Program Managers to follow up within 3 days. So there will be a notification sent from the National Call Center to us. Then we have 3 days to follow up with that veteran. We have to act on it immediately and then send them back the disposition. What did we do for that veteran? Did we get the care or what they were asking for? Did they get their question answered or were they directed to the right individuals? So that's another thing that's enforcing how we make sure we take care of our women veterans.
Yeah, follow-up is everything, and I think that's what frustrates people in big organizations and when there isn't follow-up. So that's a great idea that if you call that national number, and I'm going to ask you here in a minute to give us that national number.
I
don't have it in front of me,
but
if you call that national number, it's going to go out to your healthcare system wherever you are in the nation, and they're going to follow up with you. So that's, again, making sure that's all done in a timely fashion is important. Do you happen to have that call number handy?
Yes, I do. The National the Women's Veteran Call Center is 855-829-6636. Again, that's 855-829-6636. And there are times on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Saturday, 8 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, excluding federal holidays.
I wanted to go back to some of the services that is being provided in these women healthcare programs. Because, you know, these are women issues, but you may not think about it being offered by the VA. Maternity care, childbirth education classes, postpartum support, ultrasounds, mammograms. I mean, these are all stuff that's normal women's healthcare issues. But again, you may not think that you can get those kind of services at the VA.
And yes, you can. So so let me go over some of the things that we could take. So comprehensive primary care would include acute care, chronic illness, gender-specific care from a single provider. So we do have what we call women's health primary care provider. These are designated providers who have committed to wanting to be designated WHPCPs, and they have been trained and continue to get their continuing community education trainings that are required by the Office of Women's Health, that they do so many CMEs every 2 years to make sure that they're proficient in this area, and also training initiatives that have been done for one. To highlight this, the VA has established a women's health mini residency program, and that happened back in 2008 to improve VA clinician skills and knowledge of women's health topic and mitigate the deficiencies or deficient in women's health providers. So since that time, we have educated about 10,000 providers with these mini residencies to date, as well as the Office of Women's Health teamed up with the Office of Rural Health in partnership back in 2017. And now they have, with the mobile training program, they have trained over 1,000 rural clinicians to help women in those rural areas. So we do, like as you mentioned, routine gynecological care, also mental health, disease management, prevention, and screening. We also offer emergency care, infertility care, maternity care, including lactation support and supplies, newborn care up to 7 days, but there is some legislation that's going into play that we're trying to extend, getting more than 7 days for newborn coverage, specialty care, hospice, palliative care, and long-term care services and support.
So before I let, and normally I get to just, Dale doesn't let me do these benefit shows because he knows I just like to do all the talking, but I'm going to let Brian back in. I'm going to let the general back in here momentarily.
Yes,
but
definitely.
I'm talking to Cheryl Antlin, who's Women's Veterans Program Coordinator. And you mentioned something that I think is really important about the research and the training that VA is doing, mm-hmm. because it has a fantastic program for, 100 years of training and research, but it's been primarily focused on men. So is the might of the VA now getting focused on research and training for women? And I think you're telling me it is.
Yes, it is. I 100% agree with you. And like I said, under the leadership of Dr. Patty Hayes, since 2007 up until this point in time, we have definitely come a long ways. I think we can see that when we come in the VA with the new changes. We can see that in training. And this is not just for providers, but it's for all staff, with nursing staff as well, and anyone, the clerks, the MSAs, it's an expectation. So a lot of times the Women's Veteran Program Managers will get, educational trainings and different things that will come to us, and we immediately send that out as like an announcement, and then Brian Hayes will get back in here, and he will say that all the initiatives and different things that have come out, he supports that, and his whole team, the Public Affairs Office, supports that as well. So we continue to see, the increase of education among staff, as well as, like you're saying, in research. Also, when I get an opportunity, so I won't dominate this call, just to talk a little bit about the WISE enhancement funds that we receive and what we've been able to do with that money locally. So I'm going to stop talking right now and let somebody else jump in. Thank you.
Brigadier General Carol Ann Poisson, retired, a nurse and a woman who uses the VA healthcare system. I don't know if you've got statements to make or questions to ask, but I'll turn the microphone over to you.
Well, Cheryl, thank you so much for being on. And, as you've indicated, the services are phenomenal, and it is geared to a woman. It makes you feel like you're not one of the boys, and going to a special, beautiful area, I think the environment is also very special. But one thing that you talked about that I love is every VA isn't the same, and to all of our listeners, we should be really proud that we're in this area. The Ann Arbor VA Medical Center, Charles S. Kettles, is probably, in my mind, one of the best in the country. And I really loved what you talked about, Cheryl, the follow-up and the responsibility that if somebody calls, a woman calls the number, the hotline, that they must get response within 3 days. I can't tell you how that issue of accountability is so important to get somebody the answers to their questions.
Brian, I know you're not speaking for all of Ann Arbor VA or all of the VA in general, but I think it's important for folks to realize that these are national programs. These are being rolled out at all the centers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, no, there's not much more to say than what you said, Jim. The Women's Health Program is a national VA program. It's not just an Ann Arbor VA program. It's a massive rollout, reaching out to women veterans to let them know that they're welcome. We're providing welcome and safe spaces for women to come and receive their health care. And it's happening all over the VA, everywhere.
Yeah, and that research and training, the same thing. I mean, this is a national research. Mm-hmm. I mean, the VA is a juggernaut in research. So again, putting their research dollars and might into research and training, to me, is a big deal for women's health.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You got to get the properly trained folks in there to provide the care. And, you know, that's number one. And then there are opportunities to do lots of research so we can learn how to do things better. You know, we're always trying to improve every day. That's one of our missions, just get better every day.
And Cheryl, let me ask, as the center's now been opened a little bit, are you seeing, I know you're also, there's a lot of quality work that gets done. And are you seeing more satisfaction? Are you seeing women veterans have sort of the reaction that Carol Ann does? That, man, this was nice to go into this space.
So are we talking about our new women's health clinic that we just opened in February? And that space is definitely a blessing, and that space is great because when you come into that area now, the women have a space to call their own, right? And more VAs are across the country are moving towards, you know, trying to have separate space for our women veterans as we continue to talk about the increase in numbers that we're seeing coming in and utilizing the care. So, yes, it's very beautiful. It is a private space. And, you know, we're just like you said, as my one nurse says, we're still getting our sea legs, so we're getting everything put together. But, yes, we have had positive response having that space there and that area there. And if you have the opportunity to come over in the future, I would love to have you there to show you the facility and what our team has done in our hospital and under the leadership of Dr. Jenny Kreisman. What we've been able to do for our women's veteran. I think the other thing is that we know as the numbers continue to increase, and I'm a firm believer if you build it, they will come. I think that we'll grow out of this space really quickly because, you know, once you present things to individuals, as we can see with some of our numbers right now, even with the Canton VA, the new opening of the Canton VA, I can guarantee you, I truly believe that within another year, we're going to say, wow, look, we're really growing and steadily growing because it's not just a subspecialty clinic area. This is a Monday through Friday area where it's incorporated with, you know, especially gynecological care as well as primary care. So we're talking about that, you know, comprehensive care for women. So we have other providers, female providers, also working in that space. So it's a really great thing that we have finally gotten, and this is what the women veterans have been asking for, is to have a space that they can call their own, and now they have that space.
Well, and this doesn't happen overnight, as we all know. It takes Congress to make the money available. It takes a lot of planning and efforts by folks and from national organizations promoting women's health all the way down. So this is really a large community effort nationally, and it's great to see the money's been made available and put to such good use. But you've whet our interest here with reference to the WISE enhancement funds, which I have no idea what that's about, and I don't know where you're taking us. So tell us about it.
So I will tell you a little bit about this. This has been really great. So the WISE Health Innovation and Staffing Enhancement, so the, you know, the acronyms are WISE. This was one of the ways to improve getting more staff or equipment or whatever we needed to improve the care in our women's health programs across the nation. So back in 2021, the VA launched the Women's Health Innovation and Staffing Enhancement, WISE program. WISE provided an opportunity for sites to apply for funding for women's health personnel or innovation programs to mitigate local gaps in availability of women's health personnel. And so WISE has led to over 1,000 positions to support women's health care across the nation. Locally, we were able to hire a PSA, which is a program support assistant for the women's health care at our system. We were able to hire a physical therapist that specializes in pelvic floor therapy, which is awesome. We were able to also bring on a health psychologist for the women's health program. We got protected time for on one of our mental health champions. And also recently we've applied for more funding, and we were able to get a women's health primary care provider full-time position. And just this month, we were so blessed and so fortunate to be able to hire a women's health pharmacist for the program. And we do have funding at this point now for maternity care coordinator full-time, because the VA has said that one of the things that the VA has full coverage of a range of maternity care and postpartum service to our veterans. But also, because the VA is expanding the maternity care coordination programs in all the VHA healthcare systems across the nation, they want to ensure that the coordination of care for 12-month postpartum delivery is able to be done. So not only will the maternity care coordinator be following pregnant women, but they will be following postpartum delivery for up to 12 months. So that's the need for that full-time position for the maternity care coordinator. And I'm happy to say that we did also receive money for that position. So it's really great, and there's more things to come in the future. We're hoping that there will be WISE 4.0 that we can ask for more positions, as long as it's okay with our local directors and they are willing to, you know, buy in and see the need where we might need more positions, then we'll move forward for asking for more funding for our sites. So this
this is great information about women's health care centers all throughout the VA, not just in Ann Arbor, but wonderful to hear what Ann Arbor's being able to do. It's nice to have a sort of side pot of funding money through the WISE program enhancement funds to pull in those specialists. And as you say, that's been done across the country as well, over 1,000 positions created. So excellent all the way around. Hey, Brian, as we come to the bottom here, I wanted to ask you to tell us any other items that are going on with the VA that you think the Veteran Radio listeners ought to know about.
Well, we've got a lot of stuff going on locally. You know, this week we're celebrating Vietnam Veterans Recognition Day. That's on the 29th, and that's going to be from 9:30 until 11 o'clock in the morning at the Kettles VA Medical Center, at our Canton CBOC, and at our Toledo clinic as well. I'm trying to get away from that CBOC language. It's kind of inside baseball.
Yeah, we all have to rephrase our language here.
I know. We get good at government speak after a while. But so that's there, and that's going to have displays there. We pulled veterans and asked them how they wanted us to do this, and they're like, we're really, you know, everybody's already got a pin, can we just have coffee and donuts and hang out? And we're like, yeah, come on, let's go. So that's kind of the celebration. And you know, and if there'll be pins available if people need pinned as well. Also just wanted to mention that the grand ribbon cutting ceremony for our women's clinic at the Kettles VA Medical Center is coming up on the 13th, and that's going to be at 11 o'clock right outside the women's clinic. So that's happening. And after 2 years, we're finally able to do a ceremony and a renaming ceremony for our Canton VA clinic, and that's coming up on May 5th.
Are you able? I think you are able to tell us who it's going to be named for.
Major General Oliver W. Dillard was a Canton resident and a very prominent figure in the Army, particularly in the intelligence community. And so, in fact, the law has already been passed. The clinic has actually already been named. We just have to have a ceremony for it.
And you know, a lot of pride in the African-American community over Major General Dillard. Mm-hmm. He's got quite a story that folks can be proud of. So yep. Naming this community clinic formerly known as the CBOC.
Well, honestly, you know, if anyone listening is interested to learn more about Major General Dillard, he's got a great wiki page. He passed away a few years ago, but his family maintains, and one of his colleagues from the Army, who's actually coming to the ceremony, he maintains the Wikipedia page for Major General Dillard. So, and I actually, before he passed away, I got to spend some time back when I was in a clinical aspect of VA, and he was an incredible guy, and just, you know, as they say, he was cut from a different cloth, and he really was. So we're just so proud to be able to put his name on that clinic.
Well, it's certainly important to, and it's a great way to remember local history by naming these, just like Medal of Honor winner Charles Kettles is for the Ann Arbor VA Medical Center. So this is a great honor for the Major General Oliver Dillard's family, but more so for the community at large to realize it's one of their own who are getting honored here. And so folks don't lose that history. We're all about that history here on Veterans Radio, as you know. So anything else you want to pass along before?
I think that's pretty much what we had. Priest, just want to say thanks again while we're on the air for Cheryl for coming on. She's just the number one person to talk about the women's clinic and women's health and does such a great job.
Cheryl Allen, the Women's Veterans Program Coordinator, we can hear the passion and the pride in your voice. And as we all know, projects like this take a lot of effort, not only to get started, but to get to completion and then continuing to maintain excellence as you're going on. And based on your pride and passion, I know the excellence will continue. Thank you for joining us here on Veterans Radio.
Yeah, and I appreciate you having us. And just a special shout-out to, like I said, our director, Dr. Jenny Kreisman, as well as our CMO over at Visentin, Dr. Anthony Vestigio, and as well as Marisa Trask, who's a special population manager for the Women's Health Program. And then just real quick, I know we know about the PAC Act, and that also is with women, and then also the Service Act, that was passed, and the Service Act is where it requires the Department of Veteran Affairs to ensure that any veteran who deployed during active military, Navy, or air service to an identified area where they have been exposed to toxic exposures such as burn pits is eligible for mammography screening by a VA healthcare provider. So the VA will implement the Service Act for an eligible veteran with a breast cancer risk assessment and a recommendation for a mammogram when clinically appropriate. So that's another thing that's coming out. So we know about the PACT Act and then the Service Act. And then there's another bill protecting moms who serve, increasing maternity care coordination and additional newborn care. So thank you so much for your time today, and we really appreciate allowing us to be on today with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you, Brian, for joining us and updating our Veteran Radio listeners about some of the interesting things going on with the VA that they may be able to take a part of or be a part of. We're going to hear a few words from our sponsors and come back and talk some benefit issues. So with that, we'll turn it back to the studio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Major Bud Day's F-100 was hit by ground fire, destroying his hydraulics and putting the plane into a steep dive. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Day ejected from his damaged plane. He smashed against the plane and broke his arm in three places. North Vietnamese militiamen captured him when he landed. When he refused to answer questions, they staged a mock execution and then hung him from a rafter by his feet for several hours. On his fifth day in camp, he untied himself and escaped. On his second night on the run, a bomb landed near the sleeping Day, leaving him bleeding from his ears and sinuses and sent shrapnel into his leg. Between the 12th and 15th day, he heard helicopters and stumbled to the sound. The choppers left just before he got to the landing zone. The next morning, he ran into a North Vietnamese patrol. As he limped toward the jungle, he was shot in the leg and hand and captured soon afterward. He was moved to the Hanoi Hilton. His untreated wounds were infected, and he suffered malnutrition. The fingers on both hands were curled into fists as a result of torture. He regained some motion by peeling them back, flattening them against the wall in his cell, and leaning into them with his full weight. For more than 5 years, Day resisted the North Vietnamese guards. When guards rushed in to break up a forbidden religious service, Major Day stood up, looked down the muzzles of the guns, and began to sing the Star-Spangled Banner. The other men, including Admiral James Stockdale, joined him. They were released on March 14, 1973, and President Ford presented the Medal of Honor to both Day and Stockdale on March 6, 1976.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Well, we're glad to be back. I thought it was a great segment. And it raises a couple of issues, but before I get there, I want to thank Dale Thronberry, my partner, for putting together that Medal of Honor segment. He's always been right on top of those matters, and this timing couldn't have been better. Yesterday, March 25th, was the nationally recognized Medal of Honor Day, where we should recognize those men who have paid such price for in their life, often with limb, to receive the Medal of Honor. One receives it, one doesn't earn it or get awarded it because they did X, Y, or Z push-ups. This is harrowing stuff when you read or listen to what these men have done. I direct you to a Home of Heroes site that is maintained and by Legal Help for Veterans, homeofheroes.com, and you'll learn a lot more about different really heroic efforts by folks who some now about 3,700 who have received the Medal of Honor over time. And Veterans Radio has often spoken to Medal of Honor recipients or historians about their efforts. So there's a lot in our archives at veteransradio.net if you're interested in hearing more stories about those who've received the Medal of Honor. So timing on this couldn't have been better, and I really appreciate the effort put into it. There was something, though, Carol Ann Fossone, nurse, retired Brigadier General from the Air Force, that was mentioned last in our last segment about women and being involved at the Women Health Clinic. She gave us a statistic. I'm not sure I captured it right. I think she said 9.5% of enrollees are women. But what I didn't back up and ask her, how do you enroll in the VA? How do you get yourself into where you maybe can get VA healthcare? Can you just, I know we've talked about it a lot often on Veterans Radio, but can you just mention briefly for those who might be listening, and women in particular, why I should enroll even if I don't get healthcare, and just sort of that whole thing?
Well, the interesting thing is the enrollment process is the same for a woman as a male. But let me walk through it, because I would encourage you to go to your local center, whether the VA Medical Center, Detroit, in your locale, because these benefits are available to you. And I will say honestly that women tend to take care of themselves last. They take care of their families, their children, and these benefits are available, and they have been uniquely prepared to treat women's health. And so, Jim, what they could do very easily is go online and do a 1010 easy, which they will need their DD-214. But I think it's more important to go in and go to eligibility, and they will be processed. And if there are any issues at that time for anything regarding eligibility, as Cheryl was mentioning about some of the latest things that are coming down, but if you were in a war zone, being able to get a mammography, those services are priceless if you could detect something early on. So go in, and if there's any questions, ask to speak to the woman's coordinator. And particularly in Ann Arbor, I see Cheryl everywhere, and they will come and do personal one-on-one attention.
So enrollment is sort of filling out some forms and submitting them. And then whether or not you qualify for health care is based on a lot of things, including income, but also if you have disability ratings and that sort of stuff. So there's a little more complexity in actually getting the care, isn't there?
Well, there is. But if you have a disability rating, it's like your foot is in the door. You're almost automatic to be receiving the services in those areas. And if you could recall, Jim, if you're 50% or greater with a disability, whether it's heart or maternal or a reproductive, then you could get service for everything. So I think it's real important to be in tuned into what you're eligible for and to go in and get enrolled. Go down to the Women's Center and ask some questions and meet some of the individuals. And I'm sure you're going to find out that you're entitled to more benefits than you ever thought you were aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes that initial step's the hardest one. And before we move off this topic, I want to give that National Women's Call Center again, that phone number. So if you've grabbed a piece of paper and a pencil and you want to write this down and pass it along to somebody, 855-829-6636. And use that. You heard how important it is, how they use it nationally and then locally, and they're required to get back and reach out to you and give a disposition. Again, that was 855-829-6636. So I want to move on to another subject, if I might, Carol Ann, and it's one that I think over the last month or two you've mentioned on air and said, well, we ought to come back to this. And that's about the family caregiver program that is set up with the Veteran Health Administration. Can you explain what this is about? I know you talk to a lot of families and in your day-to-day efforts and trying to help them navigate the VA system. And this is one that's gotten a lot of attention lately.
Sure. And I think you just said something very critical. You know, we tend in the disability world at Legal Help for Veterans to deal with the VBA, the benefit side, as one of the towers. The tower that's responsible for this, and it's interesting that we've just talked about women's health, the family caregivers, and the women in most circumstances, I bet you I wish I would have had a percentage of the family caregiver that's a female. This program is coming out of VHA, which is the healthcare side. And so here are some particulars, and slow me down and ask me some questions as I'm going along. But you must be at least 18 years of age and must be either a spouse, a son, a daughter, a parent, a stepfather or stepmother, member of an extended family of the veteran. I think it's real important that the veteran must have a disability rating. Now we're jumping to the VBA side. But the veteran must have a disability rating of 70% or higher to be eligible for this family caregivers program. The one factor that I want to say that I had the most success with getting this approved for the eligible caregiver, extended family member, is since you've got a 70% or greater disability rating, you deal with your healthcare team at the VA. Go to your team and tell them you want to get into the caregivers program. That referral from your physician and your social worker will be your greatest step into it because they know you so well. They will help you write this up to apply for the caregivers program.
Help me understand. If I'm in the caregivers program, does this mean my spouse, my daughter-in-law, whoever it is who's helping me and living with me, are they compensated?
Yes, they will get paid. I'll get to that in a second. Because the criteria needs, it's pretty stringent. And the reason I brought up, go back to your team and tell them you're going to apply, because they know your healthcare needs. So the personal care services, the care issues is you need everyday personal support, the feeding, the bathing, the dressing. You need to be aware and have the safety and the protection in your daily living environment. You know, like if you can't cook and you've got some dementia and the stove is left on. So there are the personal issues that need to be described in the application. The veteran service connected disability must have been caused by your active duty or your service to be eligible. And I think this, Jim, is the next biggest point. Cheryl brought it up with the PAC Act again. I think this, for me, will go down as the biggest a recognition of service. So in the PAC Act, as of October 1st, 2022, the caregiver program is now open to all eligible veterans in any era. Before, it was just really segmented for a certain era.
Yeah, we get into these restrictions that Congress puts on the VA where, hey, yes, it's got to be this war during this date to this date, yes, and it can't be peacetime, and it can't, yes, be Korea, or it can't be whatever. So, and it's really unfair to veterans who've, right, served for a long time. So they've now said, hey, all errors, if you qualify for the program, we're going to get you into the family caregivers program. Interesting. Yes. That's great.
And so then the other reason for going back to your team or calling a VSO or a county counselor or legal help for veterans are there's a special form, the caregivers form. It's VA form 10-10-CG for caregivers. And hopefully that is filled out completely so you get the approval right away.
So let's stop here, because VA is nothing but loaded with forms.
Yes.
And you have to use the right form. You can find them all online, and don't pay anybody to get the form. They're all, yes, online from VA. It's form 10-10-CG.
Correct.
And it's always worth pulling the form down and reading the instructions to the form. If you're even thinking about the program, because you may say, oh, I am eligible, or now that I read this, I'm not really eligible. So, right, it's always good. And this first one, because there's one more you're going to mention, is form 10-10-CG.
And so the most important thing next, if you're applying for that, is you must be enrolled. So you asked me the question about women enrollment. So the veteran must be enrolled in the VA, and that's the 10-10-EASY, or go right to eligibility at a VA medical center or a clinic, and you could get enrolled. But you must be enrolled first before you go to the caregivers 10-10-CG.
These are always important forms, and but it's often, we all know how stressful it is for caregivers. I don't care,
yep,
military,
yep,
non-military. Once your parent or loved one has a medical problem, you have to care for them. It's a super stressful time.
Yes.
Is there a phone number that you can call in and talk to somebody about the caregiver program at VA if you're just sort of dealing with this and maybe a little stressed out about how to even evaluate it?
Sure. I have a number for you, but here's the interesting issue with this number. If you get denied out of the family caregivers program, you still could apply for the caregiver support service. And so this is the support care number, and it's 855-260-3274. And the reason for this is maybe you don't meet the criteria for the family caregivers program. And within the family caregivers program, Jim, you brought up something. Are they compensated? Yes, they are compensated. And you could have up to three caregivers, three identified family members for each veteran. And they will be paid and compensated for their hours of work. Because as we all know, This isn't going to make you rich, but it's helping the veteran. And somebody might need to work in the family and have a full-time job, but yet it could be supported by this program for somebody else to supplement time, because you need more than one caregiver.
So if I don't qualify for the family caregivers, explain to me what the caregiver support service program benefit might be.
Well, the general is there is another caregivers program. Let's say you don't have a relative, a blood relative, but you have a great friend who lives down the street who might be a nurse. And so right away, that individual, they don't meet all of the criteria as set up, but however, he or she might qualify under the general caregiver support service program. That's the best example I could give.
No, that's helpful. And again, what was that call-in support number?
Sure. It's 855-260-3274.
I want to, as the clock winds down, I want to talk about another issue that's a healthcare related benefit that veterans find themselves embroiled in, dealing with ambulances, private ambulances. There's some recent legislation we can talk about, but you've bumped into this problem over the decade or more that you've been doing this. Talk a little bit about what a veteran or what a veteran's spouse or caregiver should do if they have to call a private ambulance.
Well, once again, Jim, I think the critical questions I ask and I try to address, and I just had one that was first time ever. The VBA ordered up a service, a common pen exam, and the veteran got a bill for it. Well, they called us at Legal Help for Veterans. We were able to make a few phone calls, and guess what? The bill's gone. So I would say in this issue, if the veteran, and if that would have been a great one for Brian, and we've heard before, if the veteran is enrolled, whether it's in Ann Arbor or Detroit or whatever your center is, and you are eligible, go back in, call in and ask, why are you getting this private bill? Because it should have been picked up if it's an emergency. And there's always steps called community, the community network. But yes, don't pay this bill, because once you start to pay one bill, you might be paying other bills.
Well, what I found interesting this week in a piece that I read is that the VA covers transportation to non-VA hospitals only if the treatment is authorized by the VA. Well, you get into all these situations where it's sort of an emergency. You can't call ahead. I didn't know I was having a heart attack.
Right.
But I've often heard you tell folks, as soon as you get in there, talk to the hospital social worker and make sure that they contact the VA. And I wanted to, I'm watching my clock here, trying to at least. And one of the things I found fascinating is that the Department of Veterans Affairs spent $65 million in 2014, so that, you know, almost 10 years ago, on non-VA transportation services. So they spend a lot of money on non-VA transportation services, and that's really prompted a congressional representative out of Missouri to file a bill that would allow the VA to reimburse veterans when they need emergency transportation to treatment facilities outside the VA network. This is one of those things that just makes so much darn sense, but it'll take way too long to get to Congress. If you get a chance, bug your congressperson to be supportive of this kind of effort where, you know, a lot of veterans have to have ambulance transportation to non-VA hospitals. So this makes a lot of sense. We're coming down to the final few minutes here, and a couple of things I wanted to mention before we run out of time. And that is, we're going to do an interview with a Dr. Patel and an Army veteran, Mark Aldrich, about VA's acupuncture program. It's really interesting. You'll find it at veteransradio.net up on our podcast. But if you're wondering nationwide, hey, what's acupuncture about? Or maybe that'll help me with my pain issues. fascinating work that the VA is doing in that area. Again, a lot of might, a lot of power comes when VA gets behind a program, and they're now getting behind something called battlefield acupuncture and traditional acupuncture. As I mentioned at the outset, I'm Jim Fossone. If you're not used to this voice, I'm the officer of the deck today because my partner, Dale Thronberry, who's hanging in there, is at sick bay with a bad throat and asked that I jump in. This is Veteran Radio's 20th year on the air, and Dale and his original partners get all the credit for that. We're looking at, it looks like the 1,000th program for Veterans Radio will come up July 1st. So that's really exciting. And we want to, as always, thank our VSO sponsors that we have. And you can always support Veterans Radio online and go to veteransradio.net and support us as a sponsor. Send us a little money to keep us going for the next 20 years. We post podcasts every week, which you can find by going to veteransradio.net. Dale, has your voice recovered enough to squeak in and give the dismissal here, or how you doing?
Well, let's see what it sounds like, right? This is what happens when you get 76 years old and you get a strep throat. I thought it was a kid's disease.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank you, Jim, for covering for me. Carol Ann, of course. Again, a great program on benefits. Hopefully everybody who's listening in found this very helpful. I think it's an important part of our mission to get this information out to everybody. And so again, I want to thank both of you for doing that. And thanks, of course, to Brian and Cheryl for, you know, when we bring in these extra voices, these experts that come in and let us know what's happening in the VA system, it makes you feel good. I mean, it makes me always feel good to know that the VA is actually responding to what our, you know, what we need, you know, and the idea that it doesn't make any difference what era veteran you are now, you're covered by these things. So I think that is cool. And he's coming up on 10 seconds here, I can tell. So until next week, this is Dale Thronberry. For all of us here at Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.